So, first of all, thank you very much for the opportunity to take part in this debate. And Sir Paul, thank you for the report. It draws together a huge swathe of topics, and I think it's very important that you try to see the big picture, especially given the fragmentation that many of the previous contributors have spoken about. And I want to sort of talk about three broad themes, and then I'm going to address a couple of the specific recommendations in the report. The first of them is this idea that, and I think maybe inching towards a consensus, that we need something by way of a longer term approach to research and innovation strategy. I remember when the Sainsbury 10-year science frameworks were introduced back in the kind of early noughties, and the question in my mind is, what can we learn from previous attempts to create stability and predictability through long-term approaches to science strategy? Because as Chi mentioned and as Peter mentioned, it's not like there haven't been strategies published. There's been a little bit, you know, it's in a sense it's a bit of hyperactivity has been our problem. So how can you, it's one thing to say we need a long-term, stable approach. It is another to define how that will be different from the kind of churn we've had every time the minister's changed. And I guess I'm just going to suggest two things, although others might occur to me as I'm going along. The first is it not mostly about stable and predictable funding? Isn't it about making sure that you know when you're cooking up a bright idea that there is something coming down the line that you will be appropriate to you and the team that you're trying to build, which may be, it may be a multinational team that will allow you to pursue what you are intending to explore. There's something about predictability in the system. Chi's talked about a 10-year spending horizon. I remember I've had a couple of arguments with people about I've had a lot of arguments with people about Horizon Europe in the last few years. But one of the things is not by any means the only thing. It's probably not the most important thing. But one of the things you hear when people talk about why Horizon has been such a fantastically powerful platform is this 7-year investment cycle. It's the fact that a program is published, you know what's coming down the line, you can plan for it, you can start building the team you will apply for, you know, you'll work with to apply for. It's that stability and predictability which has been really valuable. Contrast that with the period that we've experienced in research funding in the UK, where you've had a series of 1-year spending reviews. Probably you could argue that's nobody's fault. We've had a kind of very difficult period in sort of economic and government finance terms, but 1-year spend reviews are pretty hard. It means a whole bunch of money gets spent in a suboptimal way. You know, the number of times we've seen money being kind of sprayed out at the last minute, you know, and people sort of scrabbling around to put an application in for something that is based on a kind of half-baked concept because people just need to spend before the year end. You know, the question I've got is, since, you know, and I'm going to stay away from opining on whether Brexit was a good idea or not, but the idea that we decided to take back control in order to restrict our ability to invest on a long-term basis because we're bound by Treasury rules that prevent us from doing, that seems to me kind of nuts, and I think we ought to be starting to call that out. So that's it. So we maybe there's a consensus about a long-term approach, but I think our job now is to think, okay, what do we mean? What is it that will be different about that? What would be a successful long-term framework? The second point I want to make is about talent and collaboration. You know, a lot of people, I think everybody has said that the UK is fortunate to have, outstanding universities, and we do. But, you know, when I probably shouldn't do this. It may, in fact, be in my job description not to do this. But I think it's quite important to reflect the fact that we don't really have British universities. We are fortunate enough to host these international communities in the UK. It is exceptionally important that they are open to talent, that they are the kind of places people want to come and build a research career. They are places which people pass through and go back to other countries, but remember that the institution they were in was doing something interesting. Out of that is collaboration born. Places where people come and you know, start their journey on an academic career. Postgraduate research students are so important. They're like, you know, I used to say before the pandemic that they're a little bit like kind of a, I mean in a nice way, a kind of virus that you sort of, you know, you can begin to spread the thing that is, you know, you are special and good at by hosting PhD students who then go off and make careers and, you know, will continue to build a relationship. So openness to talent seems to me incredibly important. And, you know, I think the government talks a good game, but we've seen a stagnation in PGR, international recruitment in the UK. We're falling behind our competitors, and there's a battle being fought just probably over the road. I can't really quite work out which way I should be pointing about international students yet again. And, you know, it's just, I just think we need to, you know, assert and reassert. Don't kid yourself. These universities are outstanding because they are international to the tips of their fingers, and they host talent from all over the world. So that's the second point. The third point I want to make, and perhaps, you know, just to kind of reiterate something that I think Sir Paul said very eloquently, we are in a period in which you would be wrong to think that a system like ours could compete with the sort of scale of research production in North America and China. The speed of the development of the Chinese research system, both in terms of volume and quality, is astonishing, and the level of investment will dwarf anything that the UK government, you know, both the current government or a future Labour government will be able to match. It is only by playing as part of the region that we will achieve the scale that we need to compete. The final point I want to make is about financial sustainability, and you'd expect me to say this because this probably really is in my job description. Sir Paul said, and he's dead right, why didn't we clock that they were missing the investment that universities themselves make in research? I don't blame myself, but, you know, we collectively, UK, what a bunch of idiots. You know, we knew that. We knew that the funding that universities themselves put into research effort, which was drawn from all sorts of other activity but predominantly recruitment of international students, was a colossal contribution to the research system. If we think that we're recovering about 60p in the pound on research funding at the moment, where is the other 40p coming from? Largely international student recruitment, not exclusively, but largely. That is a very significant cross-subsidy. Shame on us for not working out earlier that we should have been pointing this out to government in a clearer sense. But we really are now, especially, as I said, in the context of the battle that's been fought over international students. But I want to make another point, and it's not to argue for universities against other actors in the research system, because I don't think that having a kind of, you know, us but not them is a productive way. Actually, diversity in this system is really important. But remember, and I suppose it's a point about scale, visibility, you know, the resources that international students bring because people come and study in universities, the reputational benefit that comes from having been, you know, associated with a UK university and then gone off somewhere else, that some of that, you know, that is one of the reasons why universities are quite special and important parts of our research system. They've got this ability to kind of, you know, this scale and this international visibility and this special, connectedness. It's also, of course, one of the reasons I think the UK does particularly well in international rankings, for all of their flaws, is that we do conduct quite a large proportion of our research in universities, and they're the creatures that appear in rankings. So if you spread your effort, you may dilute that. Now, I think rankings have got lots to answer for, and they create unhelpful and unhealthy incentives in the system. But, you know, that doesn't stop any minister around the world quoting how many we've currently got in the top 10 or the top 100 or the top 250. Indeed, I believe that is currently a subject of some discussion between the Treasury and Number 10. But the point is, I think that if we're thinking about a long-term strategy, one of the things we ought to be is realistic about whether casting your mind forward 20 or 30 years, are we still going to have that advantage? Does it matter to us? Are we big enough to say we don't really care whether we're represented in the upper echelons of the rankings? Or do we think that will remain important? Now, my view, having spent a lot of time talking to ministries around the world that invest behind those institutions that appear in the upper echelons of the rankings, is that we'd be a little bit foolish to ignore the power that it conveys. So I think whatever strategy we craft should not ignore the importance of trying to maintain the UK's visibility, although I think, you know, whether we'll have top four in the top 10 in 30 years' time is a subject of discussion. I should probably stop talking, but I just want to mention a couple of things in response to specific recommendations. Sir Paul's review talks about the gateway role that universities could play in signposting expertise across the system, not for local industrial partners. And that really reminded me of conversations which I hear more and more in the context of innovation. There's a sort of sense that, you know, you need scale. You need to be able to. It's almost as though we're heading in the wrong direction with an increasing focus on quite small geographical areas. In a country like in the UK, I think we probably need to be pushing towards operating at bigger scale. And I like the recommendation that, you know, there should be no wrong door. If you come to a UK university, it should be able to facilitate connections with, you know, the expertise, whether that's found in another institution, another university, or some other part of the research system. I think that can happen. But I think we've had a period of, you know, we've got a bitty and fragmented innovation policy which has been subject to a kind of pretty hopeless churn and reinvention and I think that's going to need a bit of revisiting. The final thing I want to say is on the subject of horizon, because I feel like I'm stuck in some awful policy groundhog day with Horizon Europe. So Paul said it provides a platform for us to collaborate with 27 other nations. It's much broader than that, because those who participate on a third country basis can play with us in, you know, so we actually collaborate, I think, more or less every major research system. We've got collaborations that are actually sort of based on the foundation of, and there's a kind of, I think the deal is going to be done, but we need to just stop arguing about, you know, I understand there is a kind of need to extract value for money from the UK point of view, and we've missed 2 years and we've invested in alternatives, but I just hope that you won't get a whole bunch of people being, how do you say this, penny wise and pound foolish, because the greatest opportunity for the UK is by getting the job done quickly and then getting on with encouraging people to come back to the table and conclude us in their consortia and to collaborate with us. So the message, I think, should be chop, chop, and don't be penny wise and pound foolish. And at that, I will stop.